Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's a guy who will not be evacuated from this room at any point over the next 3 months. Rob Cesternino, hello everybody, welcome back. Yes, officially for the first time, talking about Survivor 33, the 14th season of Survivor we're discussing here on Rob Has a Podcast. And I'm very excited to get into it today with the winner of Survivor Co. Wrong, Michelle Fitzgerald, here on our first recap show of the brand new season. Of course, the Millennials and the Gen Xers kicked it off on Wednesday night. Stephen Fishback and Tyson Apostle manned the Survivor know-it-alls while I was at the Big Brother finale. Very fun to go out there and be at the Big Brother finale. I did about an hour and a half worth of exit interviews with the Big Brother 18 cast. Plus, I got to speak with Julie Chen. If you didn't see those, I think that they're very fun. They're up on our YouTube channel and on our brand new look website, which we did run into some problems with way too much traffic coming to the website on Wednesday night. But hopefully it should be back up and running at the time that you are listening to this. So you can check that out in either place. Plus, Jordan Parhar had everything with the recap from Big Brother 18 on Wednesday night. I'll also get back into Big Brother 18 with a special show on Friday as we head towards BBOTT. And I think that you Survivor purists are like, what are you talking about right now? But there's a lot of stuff going on in the Big Brother world. Anyway, so this is what the rundown is for Survivor. So we have Michelle today, and then I'll be speaking with the tabulator, Kurt Clark, on our first voicemail show of the season coming up on Friday. If you haven't gotten voicemails in, send them in to us, robiswebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. We'll have the voicemail show up on Friday evening, Friday afternoon, maybe. And then we'll get into the wiggle room and why Rachel lost. Also, I got an exit interview up with Rachel, which was actually one of the more interesting exit interviews that we've done. And highly recommend you checking that one out. If you haven't heard any of those shows or want to make sure you don't miss any of our future shows, make sure you're locked in for the entire season. Subscribe to Rob as a Podcast. Go to robasawebsite.com/iTunes. Should bring up the link. If you do it on your phone, open it right up and ask you if you want to subscribe in your podcast app. Go to robasawebsite.com/iTunes. Before we get into Michelle, I also want to briefly say here at the top of the season, as I like to do, if you're interested in becoming a patron of Rob as a Podcast, it definitely helps with all of the podcasting that we're about to do. We're probably going to do about 6 podcasts a week for the next 13, 14 weeks of this Survivor season, just dedicated to Survivor, not to mention all the other podcasting we're about to do. I won't talk about it too much here at the top of the show, maybe again at the end, but if you want to check that out, you can see a brand new behind the scenes video I just posted on our Patreon page. Plus, I do a weekly podcast with the First Lady of Podcasting, Nicole Cesternino. You guys don't hear from her very much on the regular podcast, but once a week, I do a show with Nicole. I've made that show available for you to listen to for free on the Patreon page if you want to go and check out that show. It's about 40 minutes, and we do a show like that every week. In addition to once a month, I do a full patron cast where I take phone calls from everybody. If you want to see more about that, go to robasawebsite.com/patron, or you can click on the banner in the sidebar of robhasawebsite.com. That's robhasawebsite.com/patron. I'm very excited to start to dig into this first episode of the new season because I haven't really had a chance to talk about it with anybody. And what a treat to be able to talk about it here with the reigning Survivor champion. Here she is from a vacation spot. Please welcome in Millennial Mish, Michelle Fitzgerald.
Whoop, whoop. Yo, what up? I'm not in a vacation spot. I'm in Anna Kate's kitchen, but, you know, I'm living the dream here anyways.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, that's technically a vacation, right?
True. Very true. I'm sipping wine, so I'm very relaxed, feeling nice and comfortable.
Yeah. Why did you guys get together to watch the Survivor premiere?
Yeah. And we were overdue anyways. You know, she lives pretty close to me, so just made the trek over here and picked her brain about what she thought so that I can give you guys some amazing, life-changing content on the premiere episode.
Good. I'm very excited. I was following you. You know, I follow you on Snapchat and I saw that you had posted, you took a picture that you had taken notes for this podcast. I know the listeners, they love that.
Oh, I took some notes. I mean, they're written in chicken scratch, like a young
Mark the chicken scratch,
you know, adolescent boy.
Yes.
I write like a young adolescent boy, but it's okay. We'll try and follow it.
All right. Well, I'm very excited to talk about all of this. So first off, how's your summer been, Millennial Meech?
It's been good. You love that nickname. I'm about it. I'm a millennial at heart for sure.
Yeah.
But it's been great. It's been a really good summer. I have enjoyed and squeezed everything that I possibly could. I'm ready for the fall, first day of fall. So I got my pumpkin spice latte and, you know, I'm ready for it. I'm going to bring out the boots. Like, I'm all in on fall, but summer was great.
You're ready to go. So as the person who is the winner of a previous season, is there any sort of like when the new season starts, like did you not want it to start because that sort of like is the sort of the beginning of soon a new winner will be crowned? Or are you excited to, like when I was in the fraternity, you'd be excited like, okay, now we get to, you know, now we're not the low men on the totem pole anymore. Now we can make fun of these new pledges.
Yeah, I don't know. I had kind of mixed feelings about it. I really didn't know if I was going to watch originally, just because I was so like deeply affected by everything that happened in May. And I've kind of spent my summer trying to balance that and make sure that, you know, it's not my full, Survivor's not my full identity. And
tell me what that must be like.
It's just, it's, you know, because at home, that's what you are. You're Survivor, you know, the Survivor girl now. And so I think it's just kind of making sure that I still have the other Michelle still in there. So I wanted to take the summer and, you know, remain balanced. And I was like, am I going to go into this season and watch it? Or do I really need to take a break? And luckily I watched it and I felt so good, so calm, so psyched for everybody and not at all that anxiousness that I thought I was going to feel. So I'm feeling good. I'm happy for these people. They're a cool crew, and I'm excited to see how it plays out.
Michelle, I'm curious to know, why would you feel anxious watching the show? I would feel like that most of your Survivor feelings should be positive ones as the winner. I can't even relate.
I think it just brings back, you know, memories from being out there and kind of comparing styles of gameplay to yourself. And I thought that I would have those feelings I don't know, maybe that idea that, oh, I wish that was me, da 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 da. I feel grateful that I actually was able to watch it, step back and be like, I'm a fan again. Like, I'm not picking it apart and stressing about it. And it was nice to pass that torch. Let them stress about it now.
Yeah. Let's dive in here and talk about this first episode. And ultimately, we have Rachel. She's the first boot of the season. I did my exit interview with her this morning, but I had said in my exit interview with her, I was a little bit surprised because, I mean, not to get too far into the edit and visibility and stuff like that. I know that's one of your favorite topics to get into, but we didn't see that many things that she did to really annoy people. And while we saw so much David, and I feel like that David is going to be okay for a little bit here this season, I feel like we didn't see a ton of Rachel. And it really was a surprise to me that for a first boot, especially, usually you end up seeing them be sort of more disastrous. Whereas this was like a little bit of like an under the radar first boot edit.
Yeah, I definitely felt the same way. I really thought it was going to be David until he got that idol scene where, I mean, if we're talking about edit and edgic and whatnot.
No, don't get us on the wrong foot for this season. I'm just saying we didn't see a lot of Rachel. That's all I'm saying.
We didn't see a lot of Rachel. But let me say, like, there were red flags, okay? Like, the first boot. Because, honestly, that scene where she's digging and, like, the crazy eyes. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? I literally turned to Anna. I'm like, what is this even about? It's just, like, it reminded me of, like, crazy, you know, ex-girlfriend, like, you know, just not really rational thought. And I didn't really know what was going on with that. But for the most part, I was a little caught off guard by it as well.
So we have now this big group of people. Why do you feel like they decided to keep David around over somebody like a Rachel?
I think Rachel could possibly connect with the millennials. I think that she was the closest probably to having the millennial mindset. She wanted to kind of give alternate methods of getting things done. And I think she kind of has a little bit of that in her. And so to keep the Gen X mindset, I think she would be the first person to flip over. And not that you're thinking about that at that point, but I mean, there's David pledging his loyalty to them and, you know, owning up to his mistakes and saying, you know, I'm going to be here for you guys. And, you know, everybody wants to hear that at the beginning of the game. So I don't know. That's the only justification that I can make. What do you think?
I don't think it's that much of a strategic thing. I think that on day three, when you go to the tribal council that early, now, Michelle, we can't all be like you and not go to tribal council until what, like day 25?
I think some of us have to go, but I don't know.
Yeah, something like that. Some of us have to go right off the bat. And I think it is probably more you're thinking about who's not fitting in or who might be getting on people's nerves. And I think that for whatever reason, she was not really vibing with this group. But we don't really know what the major alliance is in terms of like the votes that happened with Rachel. We had votes for her from Brett, Chris, David, Ken, and Paul. So all five of the men voted for her. And then we also had a couple people voting for Cece in Jessica and Sunday. Maybe it's some sort of like, okay, men vote this way, women vote this way, just in case she has an idol. But I can't really wrap my head around that this is a seven-person alliance.
Yeah, I didn't really like know what was going on with the voting just because it felt really like kind of all over the map, a little bit scattered.
Lucy also, maybe it's an eight-person alliance.
I don't know. I think that there are power people in that alliance, but yeah, I don't know. I didn't get a really good feel. I mean, I think that the boys, Paul, Chris, and Brett seem like they're a tight three. I think Jessica and Sunday are probably four and five in that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. They had mentioned that Ken was kind of on the outside of the alliance, and I don't know. It's hard. It's kind of hard to read this early, and I think that it takes a little bit longer maybe to figure out, you know, who you're actually clicking with, who you're actually trusting, and where you're going to, you know, go from there. But yeah, it's a big alliance for sure.
Last night on the Know It All, Steven and Tyson got into the idea of why keep David around. And to me, it is a little bit of a head scratcher in terms of, unless they felt like that he definitely had the idol and they were just testing him, that you would think that the reason that you would keep him around is because he's going to be good at the puzzles. And then when he can't get that puzzle done, it really does seem like that he seems like the biggest strategic threat and the person who, even though he said he's going to be loyal, is going to end up flipping on them. I'm really surprised that they ended up deciding not to get rid of him right off the bat.
Thank you. This is what I was saying last night. I'm saying, okay, it's really bizarre to me that they decided to keep him because he seems so panicky.
Yes.
That I would go with somebody where I feel like if Rachel was to come off this, you can have a legit conversation with Rachel. You're on the bottom. Hey, let's pair up. And that's, you're going to get really stable loyalty as far as what I would think. I mean, who knows? Mm-hmm. But he seems like he's just like hit the panic button, eject.
Yes.
And, you know, wherever he lands is where he's going to be for the next vote. I mean, I'm getting like Ty flashbacks from him.
Yeah.
And I really like, yeah, I didn't really understand that too much, but He's definitely like super pessimistic. I hope that he finds, you know, some kind of growth in this experience because he definitely, you know, is down on himself for being out there. I don't know. Yeah, I got super pessimistic vibes from him.
Well, that was one of the things I wanted to ask you about, where we ended up seeing David running around looking for the idol very early in the game. And of course, you were on the tribe with Ty last season where he similarly was like looking all over for the idol and people knew what he was doing. Now, Ty ultimately found the idol. David has not found it yet. Could you just talk about what that sort of that energy that creates when you have somebody who's out there and paranoid and looking everywhere for the idol?
Yeah, it like stirs up. I mean, first off, you're like, okay, we really are playing now because he's clearly playing, you know, and you don't want to be the person that's going to raise that hyper awareness to yourself by putting a target on your back. But I think when Ty was running around, we were all just like, oh my gosh, why does he think he needs it so much? And I had listened to your podcast after our season and you had said, oh, is just this thought of the idol, is it more the thought of the idol that we just react to that because we know that that's the way you're supposed to react? Or is it an honest danger? And I think that I really don't know what he was doing. He was running around like a chicken with his head cut off.
And
I think Ty's the same way. And I think if you're paranoid in the game, you're going to want that idol the most. So I don't Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about David. I'm having love-hate with him.
Love-hate.
So I don't know.
Well, I love David, but I couldn't believe some of the things that I was seeing. You know, when I watched the episode yesterday, I wasn't able to pay as close of attention as when I watched it earlier this afternoon again. There's one point where Brett is hammering with the machete. And like David is like literally like covering his ears, like it's too loud for him to hear the machete. And he says in his bio he doesn't like sudden loud noises. To me, it's I feel like he's almost like one of these rescue dogs.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes, he kind of is like a rescue dog. I definitely see that. I mean, he was. Yeah. I for a second I was like, is this real? Like, is he playing up to that? Could he really be that genuinely, you know, scared of everything? And it does seem like that's his personality. And that's just, I've personally never met somebody like that before. So it was kind of fascinating in the way that he was, yeah, shielding his ears from a noise. And I couldn't help but laugh. But he's like pointing at people and he's like, I trust you. I trust you. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, oh, did you, you know, you say you're good at strategy, but like, tone it down,
that's
brother.
Not good.
Tone it
that's
down.
Not good. Well, I do think that the biggest takeaway I had from your season is I think that over the years I've undervalued how much the ability to put people at ease is really important to a Survivor player. And I think there's a lot of people like that, whether it's Jeremy or Tyson, but just like sort of like being around them really makes everybody more calm. Whereas David seems to be giving off an energy that's really making everybody more stressed. Like that energy, I think, is contagious to the other players where he's nervous, he's paranoid, he's looking for an idol, he doesn't like loud noises. And I think that other people can sense that. And I think that it makes him the kind of thing where it's he's a difficult person to be in an alliance with because of that.
I totally agree with you. And interesting enough, I found that it was Sunday who was the one who was describing how his, you know, personality was affecting the group dynamic. And I thought that that was really good insight into who Sunday is and what kind of player that she has the potential to be. If she's able to see how you act this way, and this is going to be the result, this is how you're going to affect the group. And if she's aware like that, then that gives me really good signs for how I think Sunday will do, because that's so important. If you're able to stay calm and keep people calm, then people are going to want to keep you around. If you're creating mayhem and panic, then people are, you know, going to want to want you gone just to level it out. I mean, we saw that with Debbie too. So yeah, I don't know long term. I'm hoping David can cool down and find his footing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you something, millennial me, that I would not have let that stick bug crawl on me like David did. So he's braver than me in one instance. I would not have gone near that thing with a 10-foot pole.
Are you kidding me? Come on. It's
why?
Not dangerous.
Why would anybody, why would you want that on you? Even if it wasn't.
I'm all about it. I'd be holding it. I'd name it. You know, I don't know. I would name it.
Be like,
we would have it. It would be next to the
stick bug
chicken. It would be Mark and the stick bug, you know, but it might be Mark's food. I'm not sure. But yeah, it was funny. Ken comes over. He's like, try new things. Hold this guy. Like, hold it.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh. Shove it in the guy's face. He's already like just paralyzed in fear. And now you're shoving a stick bug on him. But yeah.
I'm interested to know now that Rachel is gone from this group, now that we're going to be down to 9, of course, that Rachel, her tightest ally was Cece. Do you think that things are as cut and dry as if this tribe goes to tribal council again, that Cece is going to be the person voted out?
I don't think so. I hope not. I like Cece. I felt like she was really genuine and empathetic. Like when David was talking about his paranoia of death and she was just kind of like, what kind of death are you scared of? Like trying to understand where his paralyzing fear came in. And there was another point where I was like, okay, she's really empathetic. She's genuine. Like I just liked her as a person. So I hope that she can adapt, but I don't know where the dynamics of that group are right now. I mean, Lucy didn't get much airtime, so I don't know where her head's at. I think we need to see a little bit more in order to know how Cece can rebound. But my hope for her is that she can, you know, come around. I had her high in my power rankings. So come on, girl.
And now you're doing the power rankings this season?
I am. I really bombed my first ones. I need to go back, scratch them out, redo. I obviously have terrible first impressions of people. But I feel a little bit better about it going into next one. So it should be okay.
And you take on Gordon each week, or are you playing against somebody else in the Xfinity power rankings?
Against Sharon.
Oh, okay. That
she
She's
did
back.
It last year.
She's back again.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to figure out a way to be like a lot wittier than I am. I'm going to have to like Google, I don't know, the pet on Game of Thrones in order to come up with her analogies. She's smart, that girl.
No,
so
you got
to
go
tough.
The opposite direction. You can't compete with her on that level. You have to do your thing. Don't play her game. You got to do you. Be millennial me.
I'm going to do me. I'll do me.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. All right. I'll stick true to myself then. Thanks for the words of advice.
Yes.
I'm down.
Talk about who are the basic John Mayer fans that are out there. Don't worry about pets on Game of Thrones.
That's me and Julia. Okay.
Yes.
Listen, watch it. I had a John Mayer playlist on stream today. So.
Okay. All right.
No judgment.
I don't even know what stream is, but I guess that's because I'm a Gen Xer.
I Googled whether you were Gen X or millennial.
Thank you.
I didn't know your age. That you have a young face.
Young face, yes.
You know?
Yes. So yeah, just to go back to David and his fear of dying. I mean, that made some sense to me, you know? That he's like, yeah, I have this terrible fear of dying. And they were asking him, like, oh, you mean like in a plane crash? Like, well, that would be the worst way to die. And that would certainly be up there, but just dying in general. I mean, that made some sense.
Oh my gosh, Rob, if I were with you, I would shake you because you're feeding into his logic, which is a really pessimistic way to view the world. And I think I see your point. Listen, who's not scared of death? That's like saying like, no, I'm not, you know, sharks, they're good. Like everybody's scared of sharks. Like, is that your biggest fear? No, but we're all scared of death, you know, mm-hmm. But I see his point, but come on, let's maybe don't highlight what you're scared of because that list will go on forever, you know, him. Maybe he should focus on something a little bit more positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to be fair and say that I thought he made a good point there. Let's talk a little bit about the idea of the millennials versus the Gen Xers. So as a millennial, do you like this idea for a season? Because I do think that it's just an opportunity to pile on the millennials, where I do like this idea of, sure, like how younger people are doing things and how older people are doing things. I think that's fun. But I do think that the whole setup for the season is just all an invitation for everybody to pile on millennials.
Yeah, I think that it's an interesting idea. I think that Adam was talking about it at one point where he said, oh, work hard at one thing. I forget how he put it, but I thought that he worded it really nicely that we're like, if we have a dream, we're going to go get it type thing. And that's the millennial mindset.
I believe what he said was that, you know, Gen Xers think you have to put the time in to do something. And if a millennial wants to do something, they don't feel like they have to put the time in. They should just go do it, which I actually do disagree with that sentiment. I feel like that's probably not the
right
way to
put it. I actually really agree with that sentiment.
Yes. Okay,
I actually really agree. Yeah. Why do you disagree?
Because I think that with experience comes some knowledge that I don't think that necessarily, like, if there's a job that you really want, that I think you can just necessarily say, hey, I'm ready for it. I'm here to show up. Like, I definitely believe me, like, as somebody who has, you know, their own business that they're trying to run, I definitely appreciate the idea of sort of like being, you know, entrepreneurial and a self-starter. I think all that's great. But I do think that there is some wisdom in this idea of, you know, 10,000 hours and really learning your craft before you're ready to do something, as opposed to just saying like, hey, I'm young and I'm ready to go. I want this thing.
I definitely love and respect that point of view and totally understand it. From my perspective, I think that it's coming in and taking the time in a logical kind of standpoint and putting in the hard work. Whereas I think what he might be referring to, which is at least what I'm taking from it, is saying, that's something I want it. I'm going to put all of my energy towards it. I'm going to be completely passionate about it and I'm going to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do whatever that I need to do to make it happen. And you want it now, and you're going to, you know, get crafty and think outside the box in order to make it happen. And once you're there, yeah, you should take the time to hone it if it's something that you're really passionate about. But I think really what it comes down to is like visualizing and and making that, you know, your top priority or everything. And I like that go-getterness of the millennials.
Yeah. If it comes down to, I don't want to like get his, the tone of what he was saying wrong. If it comes down to, you know, sort of like ingenuity and don't take no for an answer and being more ambitious than somebody who would just be settling out, I'm all for that. But just in terms of like sort of like a shortcut to ultimately getting where you want to be, sort of like, hey, I'm here and I'm ready. I'm you know, I'll be the vice president of this company now because I'm here. Well, that's the part that I feel like is might be a little bit off, but hard to know exactly what he's saying.
Yeah, yeah. And I see where, yeah, I do know what you mean. You can't come in and expect to be the vice president on, you know, right out the gate. But yeah, no, I don't think that that's necessarily what he meant. But I do like where his head was at with that. But I like Adam.
Yeah.
I don't know. He seems to have some good perspective on what it means to be a millennial, what it means to be playing this game, what it means to be part of the millennials, but not necessarily like partake. Like when they were all in the water, he wasn't going in, but he wasn't fighting it either.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he has good self-awareness in that respect.
I couldn't believe when they were going in the water. That seemed like such a terrible idea that it's getting late at night. What is it, the first night? And they're going in and they're talking about taking their clothes off. Once you're wet, these survivors don't know this. That once you're wet and it's cold, you don't come back from that. That's a terrible idea.
Agreed, but I don't think going in the water was like the thing that sealed the fate on them being wet for the rest of that night. I think there were bigger battles.
The storm came, but even in perfect conditions, that's not such a hot idea.
I definitely agree. And actually, Anna had said, she's like, they're crazy. They're going in the water right now. They need to finish that shelter. She's like, who would do that? I was like, we would do that. We at Beauty did exactly that.
Yeah.
So we had a really similar mindset to the millennials. I think we were all kind of young and enthusiastic about being out there and wanted to have that bonding time. So I don't know. I understood it. And you don't want to be the person who'd be like cracking the whip when everybody else is obviously gung-ho.
Well, I think that's especially hard, and that's a good point in terms of being the person who's like the ball buster in the millennial tribe. I think that's sort of like, whereas maybe that person in the Gen X tribe might be like sort of like revered to some degree of, okay, we need a strong leader. I do feel like that if I was somebody, and I'm trying to imagine myself as, you know, a millennial in this group, that I think that maybe I might be feeling like, boy, if I come out as being the person who's trying to boss around the free-spirited young people, I'm definitely going to be somebody that they're going to want to get rid of. I feel like that's a very dangerous position. And we saw Zeke almost like reluctantly assume that position, but I feel like that there's going to be some risk involved, even more so than in a normal survivor tribe.
I think Zeke does a beautiful job of balancing it, though, because he has that quirkiness, that lightness, that funness, where I don't think that he's leading in an unapproachable way. I think he says something, backs off, and lets other people get their perspectives in. Like, I remember him saying, it makes the most sense to me that, or something like that, that we take the shortcut on the balance beam.
Mm-hmm.
And then he stepped back gave everybody else time to talk about it. He said it with authority, but also he is such like a bright warmness about him that I think that he wouldn't be ruling with an iron fist. And I think that that's where the distinction is. And I think that he could be a really good leader for this kind of young tribe.
Yeah.
If they're not, you know, they're a little bit of a mess right now, but hopefully they'll figure it out. I love, there's a shot where they have to hand back the tarps.
Mm-hmm.
And like Gen X's tarp is perfectly folded and they like drop it on the side, and millennials tarp is this hot pile of shit, and they like drop it on the side, and I'm like, oh my god, what a great representation of millennials versus Gen X. Like, they don't bother to fold it. They're like, we'll just leave it here. Mm-hmm. You deal with it.
That is funny. That's a good call. Look at you. Was that in your notes?
I have it in my notes. I'm not using my notes right now. I've abandoned.
You've gone off script. That's so millennial.
They're more of a, you know, gentle guideline.
Okay, not a Gen X guideline.
No way.
Okay. I want to talk about this legacy twist that they threw out there, which I feel like that this was, yeah, in the words of Debbie last night, I felt like
total blindside.
I did not see this coming. I feel like I read a bunch of stuff from the preseason and I didn't hear anything about this. Maybe I just missed it. But there's this legacy twist, which turns out that it's like some advantage in day 36, and then you have it. And then if you get voted off, you give it to somebody else. And I was watching Josh Wigler had a live stream with Jeff Probst today for Hollywood Reporter. And they were talking about the way that it works is that if we go to tribal council and I get voted out, then when I go and do my final words, then I write who gets the legacy twist next. And then it just shows up in your bag the next day.
Well, that's incredibly bizarre. I don't feel like we, as a like viewer, I don't think that we were kind of guided with how that was actually going to work. I mean, maybe we'll see it if Jessica's voted out. But I didn't really connect with it because we're on day one and we have so much game before we can really see what kind of weight that would carry. And I like the idea of things being used when they're necessary and not used at a finite kind of point. But it could be really cool. I really don't know what to make of it right now. I'm hoping that it's a good advantage and works out. It could be something like, you know, some extra time in a challenge, something like that. I have no idea. But I think what it did a great job of was giving us a little bit more in-depth view of who Jessica is. And I was pleasantly surprised by who she is as a person. So she definitely gained some respect for me.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's come back to Jessica and let's just.
What do you think?
Yeah, with this legacy twist, it's supposed to be some sort of advantage when you get down to day 36, but I don't like it as much as an advantage that I could play the whole way through. And maybe this is sort of like an answer to where we've had so many people have an advantage where they have not been able to play it correctly, whether it is Dan Foley or ultimately like Steven. And, you know, Ty has an advantage. And so that these players have advantages and they're not able to cash in on it and make some sort of big thing happen. Maybe Survivor felt like, okay, well, we need to just make it only happen on this day, that we're giving them too many options to think about.
Right.
But I think it's more fun that people would be able to go off the rails a little bit and be able to use their advantage whenever they want. Who knows if I'm going to need an advantage on day 36?
Yeah, exactly. I definitely, on day 36, everybody needs an advantage. I mean, you definitely are going to need an advantage at that point. Anything that you can do is going to be great. But I do agree with you. It kind of takes away the choice involved in using it, the strategy behind the advantage. Now, obviously, we don't really know what it is. And so maybe it will be some kind of super strategic thing at the end. But right now, it's kind of just falling flat for me. I mean, it's just like I guess we'll wait to see what happens type advantage. And it could play out beautifully, but I do agree. I like where people have to make the decisions. That's the risk you take with an advantage. Sometimes it doesn't pan out. When it does though, it's absolutely beautiful. And that's what makes it so great. So we'll see.
It also just seems like a bizarre thing that we're going to carry this like leather pouch through the game till day 36, just so somebody can get like more time in the final four, final five challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. It is really bizarre. I don't know. And you can't even use it as like a bartering tool.
No, I think you can. I think you can.
But how? Because honestly, if say you talk to somebody and you're like, I have this, and if it get, and I show you, and if I get voted out, then it gets passed to somebody else, I'd be thinking, oh shit, then let's vote you out. I'll be your tightest ally so that you pass that shit to me. Like, I want that. So yeah, it paints a bigger target.
That's an interesting point.
Telling somebody to me would be like, that's a big no-no.
Yeah. I don't know how you could necessarily barter with it other than, hey, if you vote with me, I'll give you this thing. It's really not something that seems like it's especially valuable. Although, as you get further in the game, on day one, it's not a hugely important thing. But I feel like that maybe around like day 33, an advantage in the upcoming challenge, it may end up factoring into some of these decisions a bit more.
Yeah, I just don't see how you can introduce that to somebody without it coming off as a threat. I wouldn't want to let you get to day 36 if I know that you have this leg up on me so late in the game.
Yeah.
I just don't foresee it. Yeah. I think it would be something that I would keep intensely personal and not let anybody else know about it.
Well, let's go back to your girl, Gen X Jessica. And we saw her with David.
Gen X Jess.
Yeah, Gen X Jess. And that David comes and talks to her. And she's like, I think you have the idol. He's like, I don't have the idol. She's like, oh, okay. Well, if you did, I was going to make a deal with you. What was the deal going to be? Was she going to trade an idol for an advantage?
Damn, if she were smart, I didn't even think of that. That's why you're the strategic one out of the two of us.
Well, I don't know what deal she was going to make with him. In terms of that, okay, I had an offer to make with you. And maybe she wasn't even going to use her advantage. Maybe it's just like, okay, give us your idol and we won't vote for you, or some sort of like really skanky deal.
I really thought she was kind of fudging it. I thought she was like trying to get it, coax it out of him. Like, oh, I have, I can help you if you can help me. Like, tell me. I really thought it was kind of a phony thing. I don't think that she... I can't imagine her even being put in her head that she would make any kind of long-term deal with David, who's so all over the map. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to, but I think she was trying to gauge, does he have it? If I offer him something, maybe I can figure out if he has it and use that to my advantage.
Okay. Now, you were glowing about Gen X Jessica. What is it that she has done that you feel very strongly about her?
I'm not glowing about Jess, but what I am glowing about is that who I thought that she was going to be turned out not who I thought she was. And I love when people come in and play harder than I thought they were going to play. And I think that that's what it just ends up kind of being when you have, not that she's definitely not old, but she like 30s, she's definitely young. But when you have that kind of perception of the older, mom type, that they're not going to play hard, but she came in the gate and I mean, yeah, she got the advantage and so she had to play, but I thought that she was playing more than majority of the people on Gen X. And so I appreciate her right now. I'm all in on Jessica. I'm a huge fan now. So, and before I really didn't have much thought. My main thought about her before this was she eats salt and vinegar chips with her champagne. Really questionable.
Oh, that's a bad move.
So that was my main, it's a bad look. Jessica, I can give you some advice on what to eat with that champagne. If you're listening,
what should she
cheese,
eat?
Maybe chocolate.
Okay. Not chips,
not salt and vinegar chips. Like no, but
regular chips.
She proved me wrong. She's not all salt and vinegar. She definitely has some good taste as well. So,
okay. Well, that's good to know. That's good to know in terms of, I didn't know you could judge somebody by what chips they're eating.
I mean, it's not the chips. It's not the chips.
It's the combination.
Let's clarify this. It's the combination. It's like, it's like brushing your teeth and then having a sip of orange juice. Like, it's just a no go.
Wow.
But I I'm big on my champagne. Mm-hmm. I'm big on its pairings,
I thought that she seemed a little bit annoyed in the preseason. I feel like that she tweeted out like, hey, here's one of my interviews. Because people keep saying that I'm boring. She seemed very defensive about people saying that she's boring.
Girl, I feel you. That's the worst.
Yeah.
Bro, I know.
I really do know. I feel you, Jessica. And I feel your pain. And I think you're coming back. And I think that you're not a boring person. And I'm here for you. I'm here to support you this whole trip for you, girl.
Michelle, with that bro, I know, I had said it on about something. Like, I forget who I was talking to, but I said it in front of my son. And then for like a couple of days that he was just like, bro, I know. Like, all right, stop. Stop with the bro. Stop with bro, I know.
You can't stop once you start.
Yes.
You can't stop once you pop.
This is back to the potato chips? Yeah.
Yeah, we're circling around potato chips. I think I'm hungry at this point in the night. But
yeah.
But back to bro. Let's talk. What about the bros on? I'm sure
what a
that
segue.
I should not be guiding this conversation.
No,
but
that's good.
Bro,
that
reminded me of the bros that we have.
Yes,
on,
the Triforce.
Millennial.
The Triforce, where you have Jay, Taylor, and Figgy. They're the Triforce, and then I guess the other other Michelle that we'll have to see. She has very far to go in the game to not be the Michelle that sucks.
Yeah. Did you say the Michelle that sucks?
Well, that's the thing that, I was going to text Tyson today that tell Rachel congratulations. That congratulations on being the best placing Rachel in Survivor, which you would think that, you know, if you were going to bet before the season, Rachel Folger would not have a great shot to retain that title. But look at her. She did it. You are the best placing Michelle in Survivor history.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
I hope that she can, you know, she has a little extra L in her name. So
one extra.
I don't know.
There's a Michelle from Survivor Pearl Islands. I'm trying to think if there's any other Michelles along the way. Is there another Michelle besides Michelle from?
There's an Asian Michelle. Is that the
Michelle
one?
Michelle Yee?
Is that the one from?
Michelle
Yee?
Yeah. Okay. So I guess to be the Michelle that sucks, you would have to do worse than Michelle from Survivor Pearl Islands.
I don't know where she landed, but I'm hoping that this is not the Michelle that sucks. She's definitely a little bit all over the map. I do not know what to think about her. I mean, what are your perceptions of Michelle? Because she's a tough read.
That's why I was saying in the preseason, I didn't really get a good feel for her. But I was actually very surprised that she ends up fitting in with these bros and Figgy, where you would think that we have sort of like a misfit alliance and then sort of like the popular people alliance. What would you call them? You're just calling them the bros?
I guess we can go with the bros. Yeah, I think that they had said like freaks and geeks, but I don't really think that they're freaks. So I don't know. I think, yeah, they're the bros. I like that. I'm going to hang on to that.
I was surprised that 2L Michelle ends up getting involved with this group.
So I see it more as, like they said, the tripod. I think that Michelle is kind of, you know, on the cusp of that. But I think that she also has, you know, her one foot in the other alliance as well. And I think that she has the great flexibility right now to go either way. Mari seems to be kind of pigeonholing her in that Cool Kids alliance, the Bro alliance. But I think she has a lot more flexibility than pretty much any of the other bros. And that's my perspective.
She could go either way.
Like Michelle. I like her. But then she does this really weird thing of having one stance and then going and saying something that's like totally opposite.
Like what?
Like she does Bible. I can refer to my notes for this because I wrote this down. Okay. It stuck with me. So she does, you know, the Bible ministry, whatever, you know, Hannah said it best. So you do like Bible stuff or whatever.
Yes.
Whatever she does. But then she says she wants to be viewed as somebody who really may care for you. It's like, but wouldn't you, if that's what your background is, wouldn't you actually care for somebody? Why are you saying that really may care for you? It just doesn't match up. I'm just getting like mixed vibes on her.
I hear that. Let's talk about these bros and Figgy. First off, that I think that Figgy, if you were going to say that, who is the person that could be the Michelle in this season? I would have said preseason that it's Figgy. She's another bartender. Maybe you felt like that she could play a game that might be similar in some ways. But you end up with her going out there and really bonding with these bros. And I feel like I'm out on Figgy.
Yeah, are you?
Yes.
Okay. I know what you're saying. I definitely got it so much pregame. I was thinking like, oh, this girl, she seems like me that got like hit with an electric current. Like a little, you know, like, I don't know, like a little bit
like
sassy,
a taser?
Like sassier. Yeah. Like, no, like a little zip. Like,
whoa.
Now it's just a little jazzed up version of me, you know?
Yeah.
And I liked her and I do like her now as well. But I think it's easy. Like, you know, they're hugging each other and, you know, she's getting all these words of affirmation in Survivor. That's what you're looking for.
Michelle, would you hang out with Taylor and Jay? Are those like two guys that you would hang out with?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I would definitely hang out with them. In the same token, I also think I would hang out with Mari, whatever. I probably love Zeke the most, but like I definitely could see myself hanging out with them. I think that I gravitated towards girls in the game for whatever reason, but different circumstances. I don't know. I don't know how to read that.
Basically, you could get along with anybody except for Neil.
I like Neil. Yes. Okay. We're good. Okay. We're good. Neil, send me, I'm out on his Three Twins coupons. Neil, if you could send me some of those
coupons,
that would be great. Yeah. You can. Yeah. He hooks it up, you know, he
with
hooks
coupons,
me up with his,
what, like a dollar off?
Full free pint, Rob. Full free pint. And there's this lemon cookie one, and it's like called the panty dropper. And yeah, I'm all in on that. So, yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. Boy, that seems like somebody who's very, very thirsty for ice cream.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, we veered off path.
Right,
I tend to do that.
I apologize. That's my fault. I shouldn't take it there. But so then going back to these guys, I thought this was horrible watching these, this Triforce. It's just like you watch this on Survivor and it's like, this is never going to work. But you feel like that this isn't the worst thing in the world, that this isn't like the three worst people that are ever assembled?
No, I think it's cute. They have their arms around each other. It reminded me of like me drunk in the bar, like slinging my arms around my friends and being like, I love you guys. Mm-hmm. Like, I love you. I think you get caught up in the moment and you find people that you really trust. And that's like an overwhelming sense of, wow, I appreciate that I have somebody out here that I think I can trust wholeheartedly. And that's hard to say on day three. You've yet to see him, but it seems that they have that chemistry that they just trust each other right off the bat.
But Michelle, it speaks to me that these players do not have the ability to either see A, how they're going to be perceived by the rest of the group, and B, how they're going to be perceived by the audience. Because I think that it's the easiest thing in the world to see. That if you start to have like this clicky group in this alliance, that one, you're way outnumbered, and two, that this is the kind of thing that just the audience hates this alliance.
Right. The self-awareness maybe isn't completely there in how tight they're being portrayed by everybody else. And that's definitely something that you have to manage and keep an eye on, because people will want to break that up. I don't know. I didn't really, as a viewer, you know, mind it. I just said, okay, how is this going to pan out? We're seeing hints of romance next episode. And
now, who's
kind
the
of
romance
seen this
between?
Young,
who's the romance?
I don't know. I really don't.
Figgy with Jay or Figgy with Taylor? And do you think that this could turn into like this love triangle? Where
I definitely could see it turning into some kind of love triangle.
Oh, boy. Well, I like that. I like that. I'm pulling for that.
Yeah, same. I'm all about that.
Yeah.
But I think that out of all of them, Figgy seems the most self-aware to me. Mm-hmm. That she says at one point, she's kind of saying to Jay, she says, where is everybody? I don't like when I don't have eyes on everybody. I need to know what's going on. And I kind of felt that at least when I played, I liked being positioned in the middle of the camp so I can kind of see everything. See who's pairing off, who's going with who. I like to have tabs. Okay, this person, these people are walking away. Gives you a lot of insight. So I like that she seemed to recognize that she needs to do that to keep kind of tabs on people. And I think that that will help her.
I agree. I think she's the best of those three.
I think that she's the most socially capable out of the three. But I liked, there was bits from Taylor that I thought were really funny, like the sleep like a baby line and babies don't sleep well. I get that. I don't know.
You thought that's a good observational guy. He's like Jerry Seinfeld.
I'm giving you really, really, you know, strategic nuggets here. I laughed when that came out. I was like, I get it. Yeah. I don't know why people say sleep like a baby.
They
sleep
don't
like
sleep.
Shit. Like,
yeah, they
I
don't
feel
sleep
that
great. Yeah. I can verify that. That is true. It's interesting to see how that's going to ultimately go. Now, the driving force of the people that are saying like, hey, we got to break this up, seemed like it was the combination of Hannah, who then starts to speak to Mari. Do you feel like, is it too early for Hannah to be going and trying to mount this counter resistance? Because unless that this group of this Triforce is targeting her, it is the kind of thing that could blow up in your face.
Yeah. And what also like are your motives for doing it? Is it because you're feeling a little bit left out, or mm-hmm. is it because you're seeing, you want to put it in everybody's heads that that's a threat, or like, what is your motive? And as long as her, you know, as long as she says it in a calm way and like her motive is purely strategic based, and I think she can keep a level head about it. But if I think she came across as being like, I don't want the cool kids to do well. Mm-hmm. Whereas Mary was like, okay, like I'm just going to put it in everybody's heads that these four are alienating themselves. And I think she was viewing it more on a strategic level than Hannah. But I don't, yeah, I think that it might be a kind of premature thing to be spearheading at this point.
Let me ask you a question from Edward Morris as we go through some of this that he wants to know, Edmo wants to know, does Hannah remind you of Aubrey? Do you get an Aubrey vibe from Hannah?
Yes, I think that there are certain similarities in quirkiness. They're both from Boston. I mean, they definitely share that you know, smart, a little bit geeky, kind of endearing thing about them. But I think that what Aubrey had was this amazing ability to read people and read what they need and what they want and what they want to hear. And I don't know if Hannah has the maturity in order to be able to do that and use it to her advantage. So it's yet to be seen whether they play similar. I think that there are certain similarities. I think Hannah's maybe a little bit more like forced quirky, but I don't, you know, maybe that's just how she is. It's too early to tell. Once you start getting it's too early to tell. But
you know, the tricky thing,
I see similarities. Do you?
I mean, I think that there are certainly physical characteristics that you say that they could be similar. The tricky thing though is sort of like in our minds, we're thinking of Aubrey as day 39 Aubrey, fully formed Aubrey. But when we go back and we look at the first episode of Survivor Go Wrong, I mean, Aubrey has a pretty disastrous first episode of the show where she ends up like she isn't feeling well and Debbie has to like nurse her back to health. So a lot of times we get these survivors out there and in the first couple of weeks of the game that they're not this fully formed player that we remember. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so hard to really, you know, in the beginning of the game, like who knows, like by, you know, 2 weeks from now, David could be completely settled in. He could be a totally different guy. That there's just so many different ways that the game can change the person, especially I think that's going to be a bigger thing with these young people in the game who, you know, maybe have not faced a challenge like Survivor in their entire lives. So it's hard to really tell where somebody like Hannah, who's a young person, ultimately ends up going. Because I feel like that you certainly could make that case about Aubrey.
Yeah, I see more Aubrey of a more Aubrey story arc in maybe David. I mean, he's obviously way more extreme than Aubrey, but having that like really, you know, on the bottom, you know, really unable to adapt at first. And then, you know, you start to come into your own. And I almost see him more as her parallel, or Zeke for that matter. Like Zeke is like, oh, you know, here's all these kids and I'm this 80-year-old guy. And then he ends up making fire. I almost see the parallels more with those two in Aubrey than Hannah. Mm-hmm. I think that it's really easy to pigeonhole Hannah as similar to Aubrey just because they have, you're right, similar physical characteristics and the quirkiness, and they're both from Boston. And, you know, I don't think their games are going to parallel too much.
Now, one of the other questions that I had for you, people wanted to know about that we have Will, who's a high school student, and obviously you played with Julia, who was a college freshman when you guys played in Corona?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So in terms of somebody who's playing the game that young, can you speak at all to what it was like for Julia to be facing a game like that at such a young age?
Well, Julia is extremely mature for her age.
Will is too.
I definitely sense that from Will. He's a wonderful narrator every time he spoke, and I'm sure it has a little bit to do with his voice. He just has that radio voice. But he was narrating something and I was like, wow, like he really, like he tells it exactly how it is. And I think that he's great for being on TV. He has a great voice. But I do think that he's a little bit more mature for his age, but I thought it was bold to come out and right off the bat, like that hand shot up. I'm 18 years old. I'm in high school. Like, he took a different approach than Julia said, I'm 22 and I'm, you know, not this young girl. So I don't know. I
think
that
he should. Let's explore that a little bit, because that Julia, I remember she came out and said, okay, well, I'm going to lie to people and say that I'm older, and that she felt like that was going to provide her more safety. But Will has said that I'm going to really embrace the fact that I'm 18 so that hopefully somebody takes me under their wing. Why was it important for Julia to be 22 instead of 19?
I do think that Julia had a few more hurdles than Will. I would hate to say a gender bias, but there is some kind of stereotype. First off, she was coming in on Beauty Tribe. Automatically, a young, blonde, bubbly girl on Beauty Tribe is going to be looked at a little bit ditzy. And I think she was already fighting that battle and already, you know, looks younger. And I just think it wouldn't be helpful to her story until maybe Final Tribal, where she can, you know, use that to her advantage. Whereas Will coming in, he could say, hey, I'm younger, show me your ways. And that can be an endearing quality. I don't think he's facing as many obstacles as Julia maybe was right from the get. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. What are your perceptions of that?
I think that's an interesting point that you make about in a different sort of tribe and with a woman as opposed to a male player in the game. I think it's really going to be set up well for Will, because being the 18-year-old person in this tribe of young people, you're not going to have, like, you know, 40-year-old people in this tribe saying, like, oh, what's this 18-year-old kid? I mean, for the, you know, 23-year-old, 24-year-old that's out there in this millennial tribe, it's like, okay, he's 18, not a huge deal. They're not going to be looking at him in the same way where people who are older say, okay, well, this is like a kid that's out here.
Yeah, I think he has a good shot of being able to kind of adapt in with this millennial tribe. I think that we didn't see a lot of the dynamic between him and really anybody alliance forming. But I could see him easily adapt, like being with Zeke and with maybe Adam and maybe Han. Like, I could see him blending in really easily.
Yeah.
And I think he should do pretty well. I do think that, I don't think that his age is going to be a huge roadblock, you know, maybe further down the line. But right now, I think he's doing a great job for his age, for sure.
Who else from this group really stands out to you?
Let me see. You know who I'm surprised didn't stand out? Michaela. We didn't see much of her.
Yeah. Yeah, she was rather invisible, Michaela. We didn't see too much of her. And also, Paul wasn't a huge character. I mean, he was he was everywhere in the preseason, but other than that sort of like one moment that he had with Rachel when they were digging the hole, and then he also came out and said, like, hey, look, I'm so happy we're taking on the millennials because they're a bunch of little babies and we're going to beat them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Paul, you look at him and it's like shock value of Paul. But I think he adapted pretty well to the Gen X tribe. It seemed like, I'm sorry, but I love the scene that he smells the fish. I thought that was so funny. Mm-hmm. But I like Paul so far. I don't know. I don't really have many notes on him, to be honest. It seems like he's in a good, solid group.
Yeah.
What are your perceptions of Paul? Yeah, he did seem really big in pregame. I was surprised that he wasn't at the forefront, this aggressive kind of force right out the bat. But
he seemed like he was going to be like a bigger character in terms of how the season was going to go. But we haven't seen him carry on too much in terms of that tribe. I've also really come to like Brett. I think that we figured that he was going to be a character, but I thought he would be maybe a little bit more of a villain. And he seems like he's a super likable guy out there.
I like Brett. I'm a Brett fan for sure. I'm Team Brett. He seems really cool. I like that he's a police officer. I think that will enable him to kind of take authority, but also he seems aware enough to, you know, get in good with people and realize, hey, maybe don't raise paranoia at this point. And he seems pretty in touch with what's going on in the group. So yeah. Right now he seems in a good spot.
Him and Chris seem like they're doing really good here.
Yeah, and they both seem really positive. Like, mm-hmm. I noticed that they always had a positive tone when they were speaking. Like, even Chris would say, you know, something kind of negative about David, but he'll also say David's redeeming qualities. So I like that about them. They seem to be like a really have a good mindset. So I'm a fan of that duo, and I hope that we see that out through the course of the game further.
Michelle, my biggest surprise from Wednesday night was Sunday. I thought Sunday was going to be a total train wreck, total disaster, and she was good. She was I did not even see this outcome for Sunday.
Same. And Jeff said it in pregame. He was like, oh, she could go out first or she could make it right to the end. And I'm thinking Sunday is going to be the second one. I think that she'll get really far. She's super self-aware. She seems to easily mesh in with everybody. I don't think her head's going to be on the chopping block anytime soon. Yeah, I like Sunday too. She's super sweet. I like her.
She came in and she was like good at the puzzle too.
I know. It's so easy to panic in a puzzle situation. And in, I always noticed it was harder in the group challenges for me. Once you get to individual, if you fail, then that weight is on you and you're dealing with your own consequences. In a group setting, the pressure is really intense, especially the first challenge. So you want to do really, really well. You want to perform really well. And I thought that it was great that she stepped up and was able to kind of keep a level head. Yeah. So Sunday, I like your little ding on Sunday. I'm about it.
Thank you. All right, I want to dive into more of these questions from the listeners. And let me just follow up on that last point that you were saying. Drew Bingham writes in to say, what's the best way to overcome a bad performance in a challenge? How do you avoid becoming the target? There were a couple points that, you know, it's not necessarily on the Millennial Meech highlight reel, but there was a couple of not so hot team performances along the way before you ended up winning some individual challenges. So how do you know you didn't have to go to tribal council following one of those, but how would you be able to spin that and avoid being the target after a bad challenge performance?
Yeah, I definitely fudged up a lot of challenges. I could not seem to get my nerves under control when I was in that group dynamic, and I would panic and I would screw up. And the more you beat yourself up about it, the more that you get in your head, the more that you fail. And I was free of that once it got to individual, but luckily I never really had to reap the repercussions of, you know, my failures. But Neil, like a lot of the dynamic between me and Neil, a lot of the problems is that when I did screw up, he would, you know, was really, really hard on me. And I was already low. Like there was no doubt that I was the one to screw that up. So to kind of get it fashioned that you were the one to screw up, I just separated from the group. I owned up to it. I said, hey guys, I know that I was the one who screwed up here. There's no beating around the bush. And I'm really, really sorry. I'm going to go step away and take some time because I'm really upset that I let you guys down. And like I just gave them their space to bitch about me. And mm-hmm. I took my space to calm myself down so that I could be whatever redeeming qualities I could bring back to the table and try and go in with a positive mindset rather than be like the upset person in the corner who really fudged it up for everybody. So I just tried to pull myself away.
Yeah.
And then come back in a better headspace and let maybe they'll cool off too. And you start worrying about other things. And luckily I never had to really see how that could negatively affect me.
Because I feel like that's kind of counterintuitive, the idea of, okay, I'll just let everybody have a bunch of time to bitch about me because I screwed up.
So my mindset is they all know it. They're all going to go off and talk about it anyways. So I said, okay, let them bitch, let them cool off. And then I'll pull them aside one by one and I'll talk about it with them and hash it out and, you know, be able to kind of plead my case in that way. But I'm not going to sit there and be like the negative, there's an elephant in the room, like, you know, and I don't want to be that person to make it more uncomfortable for everybody else. I think that if it comes back to the group being comfortable, if you're the source of the discomfort, that's, to me, that's a heavier weight than like everybody bitching about it and then it being over. Like, wow. I'd much rather it that way than being that weight of that negativity and simmering in that.
Michelle, I have to be honest, I have no idea if this is good advice or not, but it is fascinating to me. So in a group setting, if everybody's mad at you, just let them be have their time to be mad at you. And then instead of trying to do damage control and spin, just let everybody be pissed and then they'll just get over it. And then you can sort of like try to work back one on one. This is very interesting.
I don't know. I don't know if it's good advice, but I know that rather than sitting around, it's like just that black pit of sitting there. It's like failure, failure, failure. Like you're making everybody uncomfortable. They're tiptoeing around you. You know, they know. It's like, fuck it. Just you guys hash it out. Talk about it. Bitch about me and I'll come back and we'll be cool after that. I don't know. I don't know if it's a good mindset, but.
All right. David Baltazar has a question about David Wright is off to a rough start, much like your experience in Co-Wrong. How does one get out of a jam like this? Now, we heard a lot of reports and we did all of our postseason interviews that, you know, things were not looking so hot for you in the first couple days of the game. And if there was a point that Beauty Tribe would have gone to Tribal Council, maybe you would have been the person voted out. And certainly David is in a bit of hot water. How do you end up, besides just avoiding Tribal Council, what could David do to get back in the good graces or get into the good graces of the people in this tribe?
I think he could cool down. I think maybe sitting back a little bit. It's so early right now. Sitting back and letting everybody else kind of eat each other, because they will. There's so many other people it's so, you know, simple to just pick on somebody who's making themselves the target. And group think towards that person. So if you sit back and cool down and let somebody else's ego flare up and somebody else's paranoia flare up, that's going to take the target off you and put it on them. And that would be my main advice. Like, just calm down. Mm-hmm. And I think that it will all sort itself out, because I do think right now he's an island and people need people like that to pick up and add to their army. So that would be my, I guess, my advice.
Okay. Ian Rice wants to know, what is a typical millennial drink order versus a typical Gen X drink order?
Oh God. I don't know. If you want a guy, millennial or Gen X, is going to order beer. I mean, it doesn't matter. If you're a dude, you're a dude. You're a dude from the minute that you're born. You know, guys like beer or whiskey, depending on, you know, transitional.
Yes.
But
wait, what's the transitional? The transition is like for what? As you get older?
I think setting.
Okay,
If you're on a date, like, yeah, like it depends on your, you know, is the moon lighting really low? Are you at a romantic dinner?
That's
good.
If you're on a romantic date, you should drink whiskey.
Well, like maybe like a nice scotch on the rocks, you know?
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to try that.
I don't know. But I think millennials,
can I
they
eat
probably
salt and vinegar chips. What if I want to have, if I have a bag of salt and vinegar chips, what do I order? What's the right pairing?
I think beer would go best with salt and vinegar chips, or I don't know. We'll try it. I'm going to get a bag of salt and vinegar chips and a bunch of different alcohols. And it's an excuse for me to try a pairing, you know,
try it. Yeah. Put it on Snapchat and then let us know. Okay.
Okay. I will make that happen. It's definitely my mission. That will be on Snapchat tonight, everyone. Wait, tomorrow? What's the best time to do it?
Yeah,
tomorrow.
Probably tonight. I mean, you have to go shopping and stuff like that. Okay. All right. This is from Amy Shapiro, who writes in to say, hi, Michelle. You really seemed to find a niche in identifying with the Beauty Tribe last season and played it to your advantage against the others. Do you think that you would have done as well with this season's generational theme, Go Colonials?
Go Colonials. Oh, my God. Is she from my high school?
I don't know. I guess
Amy
maybe.
Shapiro. I thought I recognized the name.
Who knew? Who knew? Oh, now, again, now you'd be hard-pressed to do as well on a millennial versus Gen X season. But do you feel like that you would be at home with the millennials? You would be all set up in that group?
I really do feel like I would fit in with the millennials, no problem. I think that it would be hard for me in the sense that I think that I would automatically be kind of somewhat grouped in with the bros.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I would be a little bit uncomfortable with that, just the message that it sends. So that would be kind of a hurdle for me in order to maybe straddle the line between the bros and the you know, misfits.
Yeah, because I'm trying to think and go wrong. I feel like that all of the younger people, I feel like you got along with, because I feel like then what, Neil's going to be what, a Gen Xer, right?
You harp on mine and Neil's
look,
relationship.
It just happened. It just happened. The last episode of Survivor I watched was that you guys were getting into a fight.
We were beefing. I know.
That's fine. That's fine. It happens. It happens on the island.
Now,
Nick is a, he's, believe it or not, millennial Majorano.
No, he's not. Is he really?
Unless he lied on his bio, he's 30.
Yeah, you're right. I guess he should be a baby boomer. I don't know. What's older than a Gen X? He's baby boomer.
Was he 30 now, or he was 30 3 years ago when you guys filmed Survivor Co. Wrong?
He was 30 then. He was 30 then. Yeah.
When you guys filmed Survivor Co. Wrong back in 2011.
Exactly. I was a mere teenager back then.
Yes. Yes. Trying to think of who else. Well, Joe Del Campo, that he wouldn't even be allowed on the season.
No, he would not.
He's out. Would Debbie, is she technically Gen X?
I think she's baby boomers. Baby boomers after Gen X, boomer. Right?
Well, how old is Debbie?
I don't know. I don't know. What's the age max?
What's really the age max
on a Gen X?
I mean, I think that Paul Wachter, he's 53. I think he's the oldest.
Oh,
Gen
shit.
X-er.
Okay. Yeah. She's definitely a Gen X then. She's definitely Gen X. And I got along with Debbie.
Yes. Debbie is only 49.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So she's Gen X. Yeah. I love Debbie. I think right now we're getting so pigeonholed into these stereotypes of millennials versus Gen X and age. And, you know, they're going to want to ride that. The play on that until the switch. So I think we just have to put up with the generation thing for a little bit longer. I think once that's shed, some of these millennials, I think will get along better with the Gen X and vice versa.
Maybe.
So, I think so. I think, I don't know. Yeah. Well, it's yet to be seen, but
you know, so Sydney, she's a millennial. I had texted her and asked her if she wanted to do a podcast with me this season. And she said that she didn't decide yet if she was going to watch the show this season.
And I'm like, brr.
Yeah. Why not?
I understand where she's coming from. I had the same trepidation, I suppose. But, Sid is a super busy person. She's really focused and she, you know, eats, sleeps and works out, and she's on a regimen. And when she's not working out, she has to, you know, go to bed so that she's not thinking about eating. So like, she's very regimented.
She that's the diet. So you don't eat.
That's her diet.
Go
that's
to sleep. And is that why I'm gaining so much weight? Because I'm not sleeping.
I think so.
No,
I think
you
just
changed my life.
I know. If you get, you know, a solid 14 hours of sleep a day, then I think that you won't gain any weight because you won't have time to.
I don't think that's how it works.
I don't know. Listen, that is what Sydney does. She tells me, she goes, all right, if I'm really, really hungry, I just take a nap so that I don't think about it. And like, you go, girl. Like,
yeah. Does that work on Survivor?
No.
Okay.
No. There's nothing to eat anyways. Nothing to eat anyways. So there's no temptation there.
All right. Heather Davidson wants to know, if you were on this season, Millennial Meech, who would you want to align yourself with? The bros, Taylor and Jay?
I think I naturally would end up aligning with them because I am a girl. I mean, it's not the best thing to do to put yourself in a tight group like that. In the same token, like, I very much love those words of affirmation, like the comfort of knowing that I'm in a really solid alliance that trusts each other fully. And so there would be an appeal of that, you know, for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that I would also be branching out and making sure that I'm not so pigeonholed in that and making those relationships outside of that as well. Maybe I think Michelle's playing it kind of cool. Like, she's definitely has one foot in that, one foot in the geeky side over there, and or misfits, whatever it is, because I wouldn't say they're geeks.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she's playing it kind of cool. And I kind of like how she's doing that, how she's built both relationships. And I think that's a good way to go about doing it.
Now, is it true that you would just want to be in the Bro Alliance because all of your catchphrases have the word bro in them?
I don't need to be carried, bro.
Yeah. And you would fit right in with them.
Bro, listen, I know.
I can incorporate. Oh my God, I'll never live it down. But listen, I can incorporate bro into any conversation. It doesn't matter who you are.
Okay.
So, I mean, as much as I would definitely, you would hear so much bro if I were out there with them. I can't even imagine. But yeah. Hopefully, yeah. I think it's best for everybody that I was not on that track.
What about Sicky Sicky Nar Nar? Do you say that? Sicky Sicky Nar Nar, bro?
No, I don't, because I'm not a psycho. Where were you hearing Sicky Sicky Nar Nar?
That's what Taylor said. That's what being a millennial is all about. They say things like Sicky Sicky Nar Nar.
I miss that.
Yeah.
I definitely miss that. I was eating my salt and vinegar chips when that happened, and the crunch was too loud, and I missed the Sicky Sicky Nar Nar. Because I don't know what you're talking about, but am I not hip? I'm confused. I don't know. I haven't heard that one.
Yeah. All right. So let me ask you a tough question. I'm going to put you on the spot here that I got from so many people. People are asking me all these questions about, this is Humberto wanted to know, are you recording this from the Bachelor Mansion? All these other people want to know. That there's these rumors that are out there, Michelle, that you were going to be on the upcoming season of The Bachelor.
There's rumors about that?
Yes.
I never heard that.
Yes.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Are you being coy?
This
are you
is
being,
news to my ears.
You're being coy with me.
I am being coy with you.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to be on the upcoming season of The Bachelor.
You said I don't think I would. I'm going to be on the. I feel like that's leaving that somewhat open. Can you deny you're not on The Bachelor?
Yeah, I can deny I'm not on The Bachelor.
Okay,
I'm not on The Bachelor.
All right, and you're not crossing your fingers or anything like that.
You know, I'm contracted to CBS, so
well, that's
no-
why. This would be a real scoop if you were going to be on The Bachelor. I feel like there's a lot of people. I'm not talking about Three Twins, but this would be a huge scoop if you were going to be on a season of The Bachelor. I mean, maybe it would be good publicity for CBS. Maybe they would say, okay, they would want you to do it.
Yeah, I think CBS would be more willing than ABC would be, you know, hypothetically, if we're looking at it. But
I disagree. I think that ABC would love to have you. I think that CBS might be the ones. If anybody's going to say no, I think that they'd be the ones that wouldn't turn the key.
I think that Bachelor is so like in the spotlight and famous. I think CBS would be for it.
I think
Bachelor has so many people applying that I think that they don't need, you know, why take somebody who is contracted with.
They take all these crazy people they take so many. Why they wouldn't want to have a survivor
crazy,
winner?
Rob. Yeah, I am.
That's fine.
Crazy.
That's fine.
I know.
That's good. That they would love to have you. You would be a hit on every level in terms of Bachelor casting. It's somebody that they promote.
No. Nick says that I'm like Lace, you know, like crazy Lace.
That's what they want.
I'm like, oh, thanks, Nick. He's like, you're the train wreck. I don't want to be the train wreck. I'm good.
Yeah.
I have a decent reputation right now. So, yeah, I don't know. I do think that I'd be the girl who slips into the alcohol. They'd be like, do you accept this rose? I'm like, rosé, like chilled on ice, like I'm down. Like I accept every time.
So Michelle, you went to a casting call for The Bachelor?
Okay, so let me be very clear. I was at a casting call. I had a friend who was at a casting call.
Did not write my name down for
Bachelor. Did not sign anything, did not fill out anything, just kind of, you know, moral support. It was in New York City. One of the casting people came over to me and was like, I recognize you. I'm like, yeah, you know, this was right after Survivor finished. And so they were like, oh, we just talked about Survivor a little bit. And that was kind of it. And I guess somebody there we didn't even talk about me being on the show or anything of that sort. But I guess somebody that was there kind of got the scoop. And there's been a lot of chatter about it since, because obviously it's been on everybody's, you know, radar. But no, that was not my intention going there. I already have enough drama in my dating pool. I don't think we'll be seeing Michelle on The Bachelor anytime soon.
Okay.
So you could be the first person to say, no, Michelle's not It doesn't seem to be happening.
I'm looking at an Us Magazine article, okay, from July 28th that says The Bachelor season 21's potential ladies include Survivor winner Michelle Fitzgerald.
Oh, you're bringing the heat on me right now.
I'm just telling you that this is like a political show. That I'm just telling you that this is in the news. This is something that's being reported. And I'm just giving you the opportunity.
And you know that everything that they report in those magazines, totally true.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, you know, Us Magazine, that's like the Associated Press. That is very a very reputable source. They also have an article about the photos of the broken engagements, wedding babies, and more of all of the Bachelor contestants.
Well, they're very reputable. Yeah. Okay. Good info. No, but we're here for Survivor.
Okay. All right. Would you be open to it? Would you? So you would not. You would not be interested in this sort of thing.
I think I would be open to it. I think I'm tentative to put myself back on TV. Just in general, I love Survivor, and that's why I went on the show, because I love it. Not because I didn't even think, and I think we see this in the editing on my season, like I didn't even think about playing up to the cameras and all of that. And so they can really edit you and manipulate you however you want. And so I am, you know, nervous to jump into that pool. I'd be nervous to jump into that pool again, especially under those situations. Like I have to swap spit with somebody, and like, what if I look funny? Like, and I don't know if it's for me, but I'd be open to discussing it, but okay.
Just telling you that this story has a lot of legs. I feel like that there's like, you know, three or four other news sources that are also reported.
It has a lot of legs, but you know, it's still not standing. Okay. So,
all right. Humberto also wanted to know who from this cast is a typical basic John Mayer fan.
Who else would be standing next to me in a John Mayer concert?
Yes.
I really see, I don't know, Sunday probably likes John Mayer. I think her kids probably listen to it, and she's a fan. She's like, let's put on that John Mayer.
Nice young man. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Probably Rachel. I don't know, maybe Michelle. Figgy seems like she'd be into some, like, I don't know, something that I've never heard of, like.
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of funky downtown band that I don't know anything about, and I'm way too cool for me. But I would say I think that's about it. We don't have many basic bitches
everybody.
On this.
Yeah. Okay.
If you don't like John Mayer, then you're lying. If you don't like John Mayer, you're lying. John Mayer goes with everything, even salt and vinegar chips.
Josh Wiggler wants to know, Michelle, what are your thoughts on dragons?
I love them.
You love dragons.
Yeah, I love them. Yeah, who doesn't like dragons? They fly, they breathe fire.
Because the other Michelle, to this point, the poor man's Michelle, to date, big Michelle shoes to fill, 2L Michelle, very into dragons.
Again, something that doesn't match up with me. It's like, well, you like God, but then you like dragons. They don't seem to, is there any dragons in Bibles? I don't think so.
I feel like that you're really putting her into a box here of, if you like the Bible, you can only like things that are also in the Bible. Like if you like,
but she put herself in that box. That's what she, you know, that's her main, like that was her main, you know, selling point of who she
so
was.
So if you're religious, you can't like Star Wars because there's no Wookiees in the Bible.
I don't know the rules. I don't know the rules of religion. I'm really rusty on my religion rules, but I don't know. It seems conflicting. I don't know why. It doesn't sync up with me. But like, in my pregame, I was the crazy Harry Potter fan. So like, you know, sometimes she probably just finished Game of Thrones. She saw Khaleesi walk out of the fire with dragons, and it was on her mind. Mm-hmm. You know, like, who's not moved by that moment?
I guess so. I didn't know you were so into Game of Thrones.
Yeah, dude, I love Game of Thrones.
Look at you.
Look at me. I surprise you every day.
Yes.
Every moment.
So many surprises. All right. Ben King wants to know, how could there still be people 33 seasons in who go out there and bicker on the first day like Paul and Rachel? How hard could it possibly be to hold your tongue? As a strong social player, does Michelle have insight on dealing with people who annoy you? this was one of the things that Rachel was saying both in her interview with me and I feel like in her day after, that she felt like she had some regret that she wasn't able to be able to not keep it so real with people and be able to, when people got on her nerves, she said that they were basically, you know, about what they were doing. She was vocal about that. How does a survivor player, in your opinion, be able to sort of hold that in?
Just shut your mouth. Like, the fact is that you open your mouth and then all the words pour out. And like, if you see my conversation with Nick and, you know, he's telling me how it is and I'm just completely, my mouth is in a tight line, lips are sealed, and you just shut up and take it. And then you vent about it later off screen. I think not saying anything is better than, you know, flying off and saying all this craziness. I don't know. I looked at every minute like, okay, this minute's $20 if I get a million. That's like, so am I going to blow it in this one in this 1 minute? Like, if I could just breathe for a minute, I'll calm down and I'm $20 richer if I can get to the end goal.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my mindset.
I find that the time that you, if you don't tell that person off now, like there's going to be a point like in the next like 12 hours or so that there's going to be a person with a camera who's going to ask you to go off about that. So if you can sort of just hold it, that there will be opportunities to be able to say whatever you have to say. It's more in real life. There's not that opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's also about finding it within yourself to not let those things bother you.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's on you. If you're getting so deeply bothered by somebody, that's your own personal, like you should look at yourself rather than looking at that person. Like, how do I not tell them off? Well, why are you thinking that in the first place? Like, mm-hmm. They have that opinion. Are you really going to let that bother you? Like, let them let their opinions just eat them away and let the egos kind of consume each other. You don't have to be part of that. You can be, you know, if you don't let anything bother you, then you're going to be way more level-headed.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously that, you know, not everybody has that mindset and people get bothered by things, but that'd be for me, like work on yourself first and then nothing should faze you.
Yeah. Michelle, we barely talked about anything with the weather and the cyclone, obviously the first beach evacuation in the history of Survivor. Again, I don't know how much there is to ultimately talk about with the weather stuff from the episode, but how scary do you think that must have been for the survivors?
Oh my gosh, so scary. I think that's a terrifying thing. Did you see that freaking boat that they took them out on?
I'm like, that was the scariest part.
No, I'll stay on land. Are you kidding me? Yeah, I'm going to go into a cyclone on that freaking dinghy. Like, I'd rather not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was scary. I think you saw Gen Xers, like everything was kind of a little bit sunny when Jeff came. It didn't look like millennials really had to go through anything. And then you see the Gen Xers like getting pelted with sand and poor Jessica's eyes are all messed up. And like, yeah, it's.
Yeah. Is the co wrong in you feeling like, oh, medevac coming up? She's going to have to get medevac with those eyes.
We saw the things for the medevac, but it said a heart attack. I'm like, who the hell could that be?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. Molly Shock wants to know, this is a totally girly question. I've been trying to track down that gorgeous red dress that you wore to the finale. Where did you get it?
Oh, okay. Well, I'll try and tweet about it because honestly, I don't know what name or brand it was. I had a different dress lined up for finale. And then I found this little boutique the morning of or the morning before the finale. And it was like right next to my hotel. And I saw it on the mannequin and I was like, me and my sister looked at each other and she's like, that is the dress that you're wearing.
Wow.
And I was like, really? Like, how do I've been planning for this forever. I've had this dress set up. And she's like, no, that's $1 million dress. You need to get that. So it was a random, wherever we stay for the finale, it was like just right next to my hotel the morning before. So spur of the moment buy.
Wow.
But I will post it on Twitter. I will post
like
it on Twitter.
True Survivor player, the ability to adapt. That there's not a lot of Survivor women, I think, that would on the day of the finale, boom, completely change up the ensemble for the finale, which gets planned
for weeks.
Oh, I had a
full panic attack. I've never worn red in my life. My boobs were taped in like you wouldn't believe. Like I had so much double-sided tape happening. It was like, it was insane. I was very paranoid about it. Mm-hmm. But it was, it looked great. So I'm psyched. I was really happy with it. I felt like $1 million.
Well, literally. Yeah. This is the one time you get to say that, I think.
And it genuinely rang true. Yeah.
good work with that. Good work. Thomas Tomillo says, your win had brought so much discourse on the internet. Do you have any advice on dealing with the haters? I know that you definitely got a lot of people like talking about your win on Twitter and social media in the days and weeks following all of it. Do you have any advice for any Survivor 33 players that might be listening to this podcast?
I was devastated. I was devastated that something that I wanted so bad to be, and I was so proud of, was kind of overshadowed by this need for me to justify myself. And the fact of the matter is that now that there is time and space between my win and where we're at today, I've been able to realize I don't need to justify anything. Like, it's so easy for you to feel like you need to be this person for these people and you want to be that character that everybody's rooting for. And it seems like your whole world when it's happening, but it's just a small little glimpse. Like, what I'm going to remember is all the good, and I'm not going to take with me all that negativity. And so for me, I need to step away to gain some perspective. And I don't think, as much as I can say to season 33, like, try and keep your perspective, your head about you, remember what's important. You're not going to realize that until you're out of it. But you know, watch it with your family and look at your family, because when you're doubting yourself and you look over at your family and they're so happy and so excited, all that self-doubt that you're having, that they're not feeling that way. They're just happy and excited for you. And so if you can kind of channel how your family and your friends are reacting rather than being so internalizing everything, I think it will benefit you. But yeah, it's hard to see out of it when you're like in the midst of the social media.
Right.
Wait. Yeah.
And just in terms of like the week to week, because, you know, I remember when I did the show and just like going on and like, you know, there was like a million different threads on Survivor Sucks and different message boards. And I can't really imagine what it would be like for to go and do the show on social media, because believe me, I'm on social media constantly. But I feel like that most of the feedback, at least that I receive in terms of the podcast, is, for the most part, you know, not 100%, but a lot of it is positive, because it's people who like the podcast, listen to it. And for the most part, not 100%, but for the most part, the people that don't really like the podcast tend to not listen. Whereas people watch Survivor and they don't stop watching it because they don't like you. And a lot of times that they can be very vocal. And either you have people who are sort of like really not liking you and tagging you in posts, which it's sort of like it's hard to avoid that stuff when people are like, you know, tagging you on Twitter or Instagram and then complaining about you. Or then you also have people on like podcasts and blogs and stuff like that, which you do tend to seek out when you are somebody who's on the show. So do you have any specific advice in terms of how to handle that? Do you think that these people that are on Survivor 33 just should completely ignore it, or is there a way to sort of deal with it better?
There's definitely no way to ignore it. I mean, it's in our nature to go seek out, you know, all the information that we can on, you know, what people are thinking about us, at least in my nature. Like, I just want to know how everybody else is viewing me. And like, I just think that that part, that struggle that I dealt with getting so much hate, was not something that I expected to have to deal with. And it was part of my journey. It was part of, you know, I went and I conquered something so amazing. And I thought that that was going to be the end of it. And I thought that that was going to be, you know, from there, it was going to be all butterflies and rainbows and everything was going to be beautiful. But the reality of it is that's not what I experienced. And so recognizing that and making that part of my path and my journey and what I've learned, just recognizing that it's not an easy pill to swallow, but that it's going to make you stronger in the end. I don't think that there's a way that you could shut it off. I don't think there's a way that you're not going to check what people are saying or let it affect you. But taking it with a grain of salt and
a grain of vinegar,
definitely. definitely. Oh gosh, back to the salt and vinegar. But yeah, I think it was really hard for me. It was really, really hard for me. And anybody who's going to go through it, it's going to be hard for them too. There's no way around that. But labeling, it's not a bad thing to have to face a hurdle like that. It's just part of your own personal path, and that's okay. So
what's your advice in terms of people, like, you say block people, don't block people?
I don't block anyone. I've never blocked anyone. Sometimes I shoot them out in LOL.
Yeah.
Like if somebody says something really hurtful, I'll just tweet back at them LOL because they're tagging me, but maybe they don't think that I'm going to see it. Maybe they don't realize that I'm actually on the other end of that thing that they're tagging. And I do see it. I see every comment that everybody writes about me. And some of them are just
all
so
of them?
Ridiculous.
Wow.
I see everything
like
that
Santa.
Everybody writes.
Yeah. Wow.
And I'm not like super famous. Like I don't get like so many crazy things, but I do, you know, I see them, and if they're really insane and ridiculous and hurtful, then I just shoot out an LOL and I screenshot it and I send it to my sister and I say, look at this freaking doucher.
Doucher.
And that's how I deal with it.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, so
if people from Survivor 33 need to reach out to you, are you willing to be a mentor to people?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Social
if you
media
are struggling
mentor.
With, I will be a social media mentor. I'll be a mentor in any way that you need me. I think that we have a unique position to be kind of the face of Survivor. And you want to be that positive. Well, you know,
not just the pretty face of Survivor. That's what Figgy said.
Not just a pretty face. Yeah. But I think that how we're interacting with people is a reflection of, you know, the brand. And I want to leave people with the most positive feeling that they can. Like if you meet me, then I want you to say, oh, I met somebody on Survivor. Like I want it to be a good experience for everybody. And so all I can say is try and be graceful, grateful, and positive. And you can always turn to me if you're ever having doubts. Yeah, whatever. I'm always here. I'm always here for any former survivors, any present survivors, any fans, whoever. Yeah, I'm always an ear to listen.
Even Neil?
Even Neil. I don't think Neil would ever seek out my advice, but if he ever needed my advice, I would be here for
Even
Neil.
Even Nick?
Of course, Nick.
Okay.
But Nick would have to, you know, own up to doubt, and Nick would never do that. So there was
okay, a couple more questions. Patrick Tormey wants to, other than winning, what was your favorite moment in your season?
Like my favorite, I loved the kicking of the puzzle. That was like, it always gives me chills. But my favorite moment of being on Survivor, like I loved the picnic with Sid and Aubrey. I remember stepping away and it being such a beautiful setting and we were laughing. And I really, in that moment was like, wow, this is a beautiful thing. And I'm coming to the end, and I'm coming to the end with people that I, you know, adore. And it was a great moment for me. So I loved that reward. Rewards have a nice way of bringing you back to appreciation. So I love that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then Kirsten McCannis wants to know, have you bought more than underwear with your winnings at this point? Is that what you said on the last one, that you only had just bought underwear?
I guess so. I guess that's what I said in the last one. What are these things that come out of my mouth? I need to take a moment to think before I talk sometimes. But yeah, I've bought more. I've bought some experiences with it. I've been gone for like a little bit over a month in Central America. So I wasn't balling out. I was like living on a shoestring.
Wait, what did you do in Central America?
I had cockroaches at one point. I was just backpacking.
What did you do with cockroaches?
I was living, I like stayed in a hostel where I thought I was on a bed with bed bugs, and I turned the light on and I was like, oh, I felt a moment of relief because it wasn't bed bugs, it was cockroaches. And then I took a step back and I was like, Michelle, that's a sick thing to think, you know, you're relieved.
You
because
slept in a bed of cockroaches?
There was cockroaches in my bed. It was crazy. But like, I what I'm trying to say is that I wasn't doing it glamorously. I did it on a budget as well. I'm not trying to spend my, you know, my money right now.
Wait, go back. What did you do then? Then you went back to bed?
No, I went to the front desk and I was like, are you effing kidding me? I need a change. I need an upgrade. I need help right now. SOS. I'm moving all my shit out of there and you're going to figure out a better spot for me.
Right. I wouldn't even want that stink bug on me, let alone a bed of cockroaches.
You're a wuss.
Well, look, I would prefer zero bugs in any way, shape, or form, if possible.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, if there's any way. Wow. And then what else did you do in Central America?
I did some zip lining. I rode some horses, saw a volcano. Yeah, it was good. It was a good, I didn't know when I was out there, like I didn't realize how much, like it was just such a growing opportunity for me. I think that I was, like I said earlier, like I'm at home, I'm the survivor girl. And I needed to kind of step away from that and have an experience that brought me back to Michelle. And I think it was great for me in that sense. I kind of let loose and did some cool adventures and was able to come back with a new appreciation. So it was great for me.
Yeah. Okay.
I bought an experience so far. And a lot of wine. And a lot of wine.
A lot of
and
wine.
Next on my credit card. And I will buy salt and vinegar chips tomorrow.
and then give us all the pairings also. Okay. Also, then Thomas Forsey wants to know, is it controversial that the Gen X tribe that has been preaching hard work is the means to success took both the shortcuts in the first challenge? What gives with that, Meech?
Well, they got some big bodies to get through that and maybe some uncoordination. Maybe they were just thinking like, oh God, you know, this is when we get to them really like harboring on the generational thing, when really the truth is that maybe they just don't have all the coordination together and they think that they have the brains more than the coordination. I can understand that. I think that the millennials use it in a better way, but yeah, I thought that was interesting as well. They're like, yeah, we take no shortcuts, and then they take all the shortcuts. But,
irony is lost on Gen X.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Michelle, you got a winner pick of this thing?
Oh, I had Adam as my winner pick, and I still feel really, really good on that. But let me go through my people and see. God, Sunday, you know, has a good look for me right now. Chris looks really good for me. Yeah, I'm going to stick with Adam. Yeah,
all right.
I have faith in my boy.
All right.
What about you? Where are you at?
I said Chris was my pick for the winner. I think that so just sort of like a, you know, random dart. I didn't really have a great feeling about anybody out of the people in the cast. So I said, okay, why not? Why not, Chris? And I feel like you had a good week one, set up well.
Oh, that feels really solid to me. I think that you have something good going on. So
yeah,
I think Chris is great. Yeah. So yeah. I'd be proud of your pick right now. Own it.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, Michelle.
You're welcome.
Well, Michelle, this was so much fun. Do you have a hashtag that you want to give people that make it to the end of this podcast?
Oh my gosh. Those souls, those poor souls that made it to the end. They put up with my voice for this long. No, I don't know. Did you have any hashtag ideas yourself?
Hashtag grain of vinegar.
I dig it. Okay. Grain of vinegar.
Okay, there you go. Hashtag grain of vinegar. All right. And so now what are you doing with Anna Kate? You're at Anna's house. And then what? Are you guys going to go out now?
Yeah, she's downstairs. No, we're going to go. I'm in PJs and we're going to have wine and chat and maybe put on a scary movie. About it. We're just girl chilling.
Okay.
We're slumber partying.
You're not going to watch Survivor again, right?
No, we watched it last night and then I had to watch it today to get my notes. I'm maxed out.
You're maxed out.
I'm like, oh my gosh. Even I didn't watch myself twice. So I've done it twice now. I'm good.
Okay. Besides The Bachelor, do you watch any other reality shows? Did you watch Big Brother?
I watched Big Brother, but I was gone for so much of this season because I was in Central America. So I wasn't able to keep up with it. Although it seemed like a good ending.
All right. In case people didn't watch it, don't spoil it. Don't spoil it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Well, okay. I already said.
All right,
yeah, I watch Big Brother sometimes.
Yeah. Are you going to watch BBOTT? Do you know what that is?
No. What's that?
Yeah. So they have a new season of Big Brother that's going to start. It's going to only be on the internet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I can get behind it. I'm not really on the
internet too
much. For real?
You would really watch that OTT?
I think probably not. but that's just because like I'm not on the internet that, like I'm not on the internet enough to stream something, but I could see the appeal. I could see the appeal.
All right. So you're more,
are you going to watch it?
You're more OTT negative.
Yeah. It's I like that.
All right, there you go.
Oh gosh, you're insane.
I'm losing it. I'm losing it, Michelle. All right, well, Michelle, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And then we're gonna see you in New York for the live know-it-alls.
Yeah, I'm gonna aim to get there. I don't
aim to get there. That sounds like very much like oh yeah, maybe now.
No, because I believe yes, but I don't want to be the person who backs out right before. I don't want to be the person who backs out right before, so I'd rather leave it loose.
Yes.
I'd rather
you're laying the groundwork now to back out.
No, I want to be there. I think I'm going to be there. Mm-hmm. I'm almost, I would say I'm on like a 97% unless something crazy pops up.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. All right. Michelle, thank you so much. If you want to follow Michelle on social media, as long as you're not a doucher, right?
No douchers allowed.
Yeah, if you're a doucher, then leave Michelle alone on Twitter. She's at Mish Fitz. Have you thought about going with Millennial Mish for this season?
Oh no.
Yeah.
No, I haven't thought about that, and I don't think I'm going to think about it any further. I'm good.
All right.
I'm good.
All right, Michelle. Thank you so much.
I like it. I'm glad. I like the forethought you put into it. I appreciate that.
This is what I do. All right, Michelle. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This was a blast. And I will keep you updated on Snapchat. So
okay, keep us updated.
Out.
All right. Take care. Bye.
All right. Bye, Rob.
All right, everybody. There you have it. Michelle Fitzgerald back here on the podcast. Very fun, especially towards the end there. We really got rolling with Michelle. So good stuff with her. And we'll have to see what ultimately comes from those salt and vinegar tastings that is going to go on. What's the best pairing for that? Hopefully, let us know. All right. So we're going to go from here into with the tabulator. He's going to be talking about everything with the voicemail. Looking forward to that show. Plus, we'll get the Wiggle Room. Josh Wiggler is actually going to be here in person this weekend to record the Wiggle Room. And then I'll get to the Why Rachel Lost with David Bloomberg coming up on Tuesday. Plus, all of our Big Brother coverage. I'll be doing a podcast to wrap up Big Brother 18 on Friday early evening. Plus, we'll get into maybe even a BBOTT preview as we get towards the start of BBOTT next Wednesday night. I also hadn't really announced anything about this yet, but Jordan Parhar is going to be hosting our eviction show. The live BBOTT show that they're going to do is going to be on Wednesday night. So it's too much for me to do Survivor Know-It-Alls and then BBOTT back to back. So Jordan is going to be hosting the live eviction episode of BBOTT coverage, and I'll get back into BBOTT once we get through the Survivor Gauntlet, maybe on Friday. But we'll announce an official schedule on that very soon now that they've posted a BBOTT schedule. And again, I mentioned it at the top of the show. If you're interested in finding out more about becoming a patron, even if you don't want to do it, but you just want to check out what the patron 5 for 5 is, basically that's where Nicole and I get up here and we answer 5 questions from the listeners of the podcast that get sent in to us via email or voicemail. And we go through it. It's very fun every single week. I've made this week's edition available for free on our Patreon profile. You could also check out a behind the scenes video that I worked on to sort of show what goes on or why I do all these podcasts about these different shows. You can check that all out on our Patreon page at robisawebsite.com/patron. It's so much fun to get to do these shows. I'm so excited for another semester of podcasting with you guys about these crazy shows that we cover. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments on robisawebsite.com. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast at robisawebsite.com/iTunes. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.